7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Welcome, friends, to episode 9 of Color of Magic. As usual, I am your host, Daquan Watson, and riding shotgun is my buddy Brian. How you doing, dude?
Hello again, everybody.
Man, this has been kind of crazy. Really going into Thanksgiving, so people hopefully will have a very good day off when they get to listen to this, which tells you how dedicated we are. I'm going to be editing on Thanksgiving. Like, this is something.
In between consuming mass quantities.
Oh, well, of course. Like, if you're not, I mean, I'm from Texas, and you know how that goes. You got to eat a lot and watch some football. If you don't, it's not really Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
I want to open the show to tell everybody we have an additional patron that we got to give credit to. So Kings Games, Kings with a Z, because he's cool like that. This has been really cool that we now have 9 patrons. Like, that doesn't seem like a lot, but in 8 weeks, that's really cool, man. Way more than we thought we were going to have in 2 months.
And another shout out, because they also followed me on Twitch. So, yeah.
Oh, they're all in.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are the people we really like.
They really love us.
Yeah, we like that a lot. Speaking of, so how is your 100-day challenge going?
Going well. There was one video that I just, even after, you know, editing, I hated, and I just took it down. So if anybody asks, yeah, I'd still, there is a 16th video, but I just didn't like it. Took it down. So yeah.
You know what that means? You got to do another one.
But I feel like, I feel like, you know, there was a video. I feel like if I go back and put another video up, that's not to say that wasn't the thing I did on day 16. I don't know if anybody even really cares about that kind of authenticity, but.
Hey, when I was sick, I gave him a half day and I gave him a full extra day. So I'm just saying, I'm going to put in my 61 to meet my 60.
All right, because, yeah, if we're counting that, then, yeah, many of these have been submitted several times.
Yeah, it's been fun, man, I got to tell you. I'm really getting used to it. We're doing the late-night schedule. I'm getting a lot of regulars, which is cool. So my chat's kind of turning into a social hour for people who are meeting up. Yeah, it's been real cool. And I'm up to, I think I'm averaging about either or, some combination of two, a follower or subscriber each night so far. So
nice.
It's coming along. It's coming along. I don't know if I'll reach partner by the end, but it's an interesting goal to have.
Yeah, our partner's designed to take you a long time. So no hurry. You are in good company, definitely.
Yeah, I've heard the difficulties there. We've even had guests talk about it and talk about the journey there. So hopefully we'll get there. But right now, yeah, it's been pretty cool. I appreciate that you put this challenge on me. I will say that.
I put that evil on you, as the meme goes.
You did put that evil on me, Ricky Bobby. Yeah. So what did you learn this week? I actually learned that, actually from a meme, which I feel bad about because I sort of knew this, but I didn't know for both people, that there was a meme going around talking about MLK and Anne Frank would both be 90 this year.
Wow.
Which is pretty cool. I didn't realize that. And I think the biggest thing with that is it's a reminder to people that things like the Holocaust and the Civil Rights Movement weren't that long ago.
No.
You know, I think when we talk about racial issues and equality issues and stuff like that, I think people can get caught up in like, oh, that's so long ago, or yeah, we've already settled that. There's already been court cases or whatever, but there's people's grandparents that are still walking around that dealt with that when they were kids in school. You know, this is still fresh for some people. This isn't. And not only that, there's also the other side of that, right? That there's other people who are still alive who were on the other side of the issue.
Absolutely. And in some cases, still in power.
Well, very true. Sad, but true. So just wanted to put that out there. I thought that was a very cool observation to share. So what'd you learn?
I heard a very interesting story. You know, we do interviews, so I go and read up on interviews to see, you know, how they can go wrong, try to prevent it. Robert Pattinson of Twilight, and I guess soon to be Batman fame, was on the Today Show and told a story about how there's a movie about circuses, and he was in it called Water for Elephants. So Matt Lauer answered the most softball question ever. You ever been to the circus? And Robert Pattinson said he does not go to the circus anymore because somebody got killed the first time his parents took him to the circus.
Oh, God. What?
Yeah, he said, they were, you know, the little clown cars that come out, you know, with 20 clowns in them or whatever. He said one of the clown car came out, and apparently there was one of them, I guess, like, there was a fire, and one of the clowns got killed. But, of course, Matt Lauer was flabbergasted because this is a movie interview, and of course, you know, nobody ever discusses serious topics during, you know, a movie junket, right?
Sure.
Find out, you know, a couple of months later, Pattinson made the whole thing up. And it's made even better because later we find out, you know, what a jerk face Matt Lauer is. So, you know,
the thing is, like, I was actually entertained. I was like, man, a softball question turned into this crazy thing. So credit to Pattinson, man, for thinking on his feet. Like, that,
he is Batman. He really is. Apparently, he's ready. Because that's a Bruce Wayne kind of move.
I have much appreciation for that. Like, so much. All right, so let's get into some magic news. We do have yet another Mythic Championship coming up, which is crazy because this is like three in what's going to be like 6 weeks or something, I think, is what this feels like.
Yeah.
But it will be not this weekend, but next weekend. And it's going to be on Arena. So this the interesting thing here is, that, well, there's really two, is that we kind of got a new standard format with the recent bannings of Oko and Once Upon a Time, you know. But this is actually big for a lot of players because this is kind of going to set up the first real, I guess, structure we have for the new MPL and the Rivals League going into next year.
Exactly.
And this is a lot because you're talking about people having to play for their, I guess, professional lives in a way, which isn't, I would say, unique to Magic. I mean, because other games have done it and been doing it for years, but this is like the first time I think we get to see it as Magic players really go down.
And I think the thing that's different from, you know, most competitive endeavors is even, you know, even in most video game teams now, there's a base salary. Like Magic is like, no, there's no, you know, there's no, you're guaranteed to make X amount of money. I mean, you got to go win games, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And that's the biggest thing about the MPL, right? Is that you get that guaranteed contract every year. And even getting into the Rivals League, you get a leg up for more events. You get a shot. You're in better position to get into the MPL the following year. And in some ways, we're going to get to view it as like the Hunger Games for Magic, you know, at the end of next year, as people start jockeying for position to get either into Rivals or into the MPL or even falling out. I think that'll be a fun story, too, for people who barely miss. And it's like, can they get in the next year?
Yeah.
So the whole professional Magic scene is going to look very different very shortly. And it really starts with this tournament next week.
I was going to say also, you know, as for looking at all the good things as content creators, you know, people notice these things and, you know, trolls on the internet. Ah, you didn't beat so-and-so. Ah, I listen to you, even though all of these people are far better than most of us will ever be at Magic. But, you know, trolls are trolls.
You know, I will say that that's a very good point. You know, I think when you talk about the best of the best at anything, whether we're talking about Magic, football, whatever, those people are exceptionally good. You know, there's a reason, like, you see the great, when we're talking about, like, Kai, Finkel, Paulo, you know, all those guys, they are a step above everybody else. Like, and to just assume you're that good is crazy. You know, and they're all playing against other people that are all exceptionally good. So, yeah, they're going to lose sometimes. Or, yeah, they're going to make a bad call. But when you look at their body of work, it's still very impressive. It's almost like when I watch people play different video games and somebody just has a bad night, you know, you'll see people trolling in their stream or whatever. And it's like, dude, you've been here for a month straight and you see the one bad night and now you're going to take it out on somebody?
Yeah.
Like, man, go get a life.
Could you beat him? The answer is no.
Oh, for sure. Well, I told you before, like a few years back when I was trying really hard to see like what's the highest and best I can do in Madden. And like when I cracked the top 100, I was elated. And when I got to play somebody, I think he was like 23rd, I got dusted. I mean, just straight smoked. I was excited to score a single touchdown.
Exactly.
And like, even, and that's the thing, even from 100 to 23, the gap was still huge.
Yeah.
You know? I was just like, yeah, I'm not cut out for this. Like, this is just not a thing I'm going to be able to do.
It is far beyond mutants, as mutants are beyond normal humans.
Yeah, and you know, I'll say the same thing about magic. Like, when you're watching these people playing all these events, yeah, some of them got lucky once or they spiked a tournament or whatever. But when you see that player that's been there year after year after year, like, that's not accidental. Like, that person's putting in time. Matter of fact, go follow some of them on Twitter. Some of them are even complaining about having to practice so much and putting in so much time or wanting to take a break. And it's just like, to stay at that level, they got to put in that amount of time. It's tough. And don't get me wrong, first world problems, but it's tough.
Yeah, but I mean, you see the same thing, you know, anybody that competes at a high level, just like, hey, you've been doing this, whether it's basketball, video games, magic, or what, you know, there's the human body and the human mind have limits. There's just, sometimes you got to step back.
When I was in athletics, I had just a realization one day where I looked and just decided, like, I'm going to have to work three times as hard to be 80% as good as that guy over there. Like, and that's just like a rough realization to have for yourself. It's like, man, I'm busting my butt and I'm still not fully as good as this guy over here. Like, he just won the genetic lottery. And that's fine. Like, we all find our place.
I knew a college basketball player that couldn't run until she smoked a cigarette. But it made no sense whatsoever. And it was so frustrating to watch.
Man, I see some of them dudes out there whenever we're just playing rec basketball and they're getting winded and they're like, man, I need a cigarette. And I'm like, dude, that's how you got to be like this.
Chemistry.
I guess so for some people. Yeah, so we had another crazy magic product get announced this past week. I don't know if you saw.
I did.
But it started out as a secret and it only stayed a secret for a couple days. And then they told us it was the Secret Lair box, which is a really, I don't hate the idea. I kind of just hate, I don't even know if I hate, just dislike how we're launching it. But anyway, it's going to be available from December 2nd to the 9th. There's going to be a different box every day. They're all themed to different things. You can see the link, which we can put in the show notes. But each box is themed to like cats. There's one that's got a Bitter Blossom with all the tokens. They're all going to have different treatments, different foiling. They're getting artists that aren't necessarily traditional magic artists, which is very cool.
That's awesome.
The other thing that's great is they're not limited. However, you will only be able to order each one for a 24-hour period. So on the second, you'll have a full 24-hour cycle. Then on the third, there's going to be a new one, and that's going to continue through, I guess, the 24th hour on December 9th.
I still feel like that's limited because there's only so many. You know, what if you work that day? You know, you don't get to order one. Or just...
Well, what it means by not limited is that everybody who goes online to order one will be able to order one. So if 500,000 people go on and pay them their $29 to $39, then they're welcome to get one.
Until the site crashes because 500,000 people logged on at one time. We know how the internet works.
Well, that's true. That could happen. But the fact that you have all day is probably fine for people. You don't have a bunch of people sitting there pounding refresh on their keyboards over and over and over. So it should be fine. But whether you get there an hour one, you get there an hour 24, doesn't really matter. Everybody can get it. And I don't know. Have you taken a look at the different themes and stuff that's out there yet?
I mean, it's definitely some interesting artwork and some stuff I would like to. I don't know that I'm going to drop, you know, $40 necessarily on all of them.
Yeah, it's interesting because they will have a package that I believe is supposed to be $200 to get just the whole thing. And each one, they had on Twitter today that each box is going to come with a code to get you a special set of sleeves and arena that's themed to the box that you're getting, which is also very cool.
Yeah, that's also nice.
But for me, I don't know. Like, I'm not one that's big on foils to begin with, so some of that doesn't really carry a lot of weight for me. And I kind of want all my cards to be uniform or as close as I can whenever I play them in a deck. So getting a one of or a two of a thing that just looks way different isn't necessarily good for me, because then if I play with it, I'm going to be tempted to go just buy more or trade for more of the other copies. But if you're a commander player, it's probably great.
Yeah. because you're not bringing about nearly as often. So I can see it. Yeah, and I'm kind of the same way about I like, you know, have all my cards kind of look similar. So I get it.
Yeah, but you only need one of everything if you're a commander player. Yeah. So this is almost a, I don't want to say a product design for them, but it definitely fits in that space of you get to have something fun and unique and different. And I will say I appreciate the approach of finding people outside the industry to kind of come in and do something different, which is always nice.
Yeah, because that's going to bring in, hopefully, some of their, you know, fans, their artwork, and expose the product to more people, which we are all about, obviously. It's one of the reasons we do this.
For sure. I think that's a thing that people overlook. You know, sometimes we have to look outside of the industry or look outside of things we're comfortable with to have that kind of extra reach that we're looking for. I mean, it's easy to look around and go, oh, well, I know this, and I know how these people react, or I know how to market to these people, but when I see Wizards taking those chances to reach out to new groups or work with other companies or whatever, like, I always appreciate it because it's, again, we keep coming back to, if you want the game to be around for another 25 years, you got to take those type of shots every once in a while and hope you get more of that new audience. And I don't even know if this is the thing, but it's one of the things that can't hurt. Matter of fact, I think the person that did the snow-covered versions of the Eldraine lands ended up putting them available. I don't know if they have a Kickstarter or something online where they're making them all available as playmats, which is cool. So that's already drawing attention, and the box isn't even available for sale yet.
Well, that's awesome.
Yes, there's a lot of those opportunities. And I will say this, too. I think it's a neat opportunity for the artist, which I think is great. You know, getting something new and unique gets people to come and look at you or your website or whatever, and that's always a bonus. I just wish Wizards would reach out to us and we could have previewed something from the secret lair.
Yeah. Hint, hint, wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
It's all right. We'll get there. Honestly, the people they had do it all did a good job, honestly. So, like, no knocking any of them. I think for being such a short turnaround and having to keep it a secret and doing a full, like, 5 or 6 day rollout, or actually, well, I guess you could call it a 5 or 6 day rollout. They really did the reveal over about a 2 day period. But doing all that in a small window of time for all those people to go and record their videos and everything else and take the pictures, and like, overall, they did a really good job. I mean, I'm impressed overall with the work everybody put in toward it.
And as I said, always impressed, you know, when they're actually able to keep this stuff a secret, because that takes some doing.
I mean, yeah, think about this. Like, we had two products, basically, that got dropped on us by surprise between the Mystery Booster and Secret Lair, which were only a couple of weeks apart, and the community wasn't talking about either. Like, so I don't know if it's a matter of the way they're treating information or if it's because it's a product that just wasn't shipping out anywhere or what, but there apparently are certain things Wizards has found a way to keep secrets on for real.
And then, and that's more fun for everybody, I think.
I think so, too. And it's a little tough because I think everybody's trying to be the first one out there with information and they want to share it on their Facebook or whatever. Yeah. And everybody's
podcast,
trying to
Twitch channels, whatnot.
Yeah, they're all trying to get their clout one way or the other, but not realizing that a lot of effort goes into these things. So keeping it secret is actually not bad. I mean, just play along and they're going to be likely to work with you more in the future anyway. The short-term gain is not worth it. Like, you're costing yourself long-term benefits by doing it. So basically, if we work with you and we have a secret, don't tell the secret.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, I think it's a neat idea. You know what's interesting when we talk about it? You know, when we're looking back and saying, well, there's not going to be a December release, and, you know, knowing how quarterly stuff works for reporting and whatnot, when I saw Secret Lair, I wasn't super surprised I wasn't surprised at the fact that there was a product. I'm kind of surprised at the release of it and the method, but this will allow them to make some extra money and effectively keep the quarterly gains or books looking similar, I'd imagine.
I would think so.
Especially since it's all direct sales, which is a big deal.
And it's going to get a lot of buzz, you know. Hopefully, as I said, the website holds and everything's good. So it's positive buzz.
Yeah, who knows? It's definitely going to be, it will be a learning experience. And I think I would keep our eyes and ears open, because if this works, and, you know, they always do surveys and they do follow-ups and, you know, they're doing all these different things. If it works and it's positive, I would almost put money that we could expect something cool, exclusive, and direct next year, when it's basically going to be Year of the Commander player.
Yep.
So I'm just saying, just keep your eyes out on that. Just something to think about.
Hey!
Oh, hey, we haven't had anybody at the door in a couple of episodes. This is cool. Yeah, so we this must be the guest we invited over, actually. So this is somebody we just met that we would like to introduce to the Magic community. They are in MTG Finance, which is cool, so we'll get to talk about some of that, and wanted to let them share some of their upcoming products, or projects, I should say, things they're working on. But let's welcome Zekiel Gordon to the show. How you doing, man?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Zekiel, sorry, I mispronounced that. I want to get that correct so everybody has.
We are Southern. Right. We will often massacre the words.
It's all good. No worries.
So, yeah, welcome to the show. This is awesome. We haven't had anybody kind of with your skills and thought process on here yet. So, this should be a fun conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And appreciate you guys having me on. And yeah, look forward to talking.
So, yeah, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and kind of how you came up through Magic?
Sure. So, grew up a military brat. I was actually born overseas and jumped around growing up a lot, military base to military base. And one of the consistent things as a kid was games. So originally started kind of when I was really young in Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh! Later in college, I guess, escalated into Magic and grew into Magic and found a way to use Magic the Gathering as a way to subsidize the cost of my tuition. So when I was in college, while everyone, we were always playing, you know, FNM, super, super interested in it. But I realized, you know, a lot of these cards had value. A lot of these cards, you know, were obviously in peak demand when bannings and unbannings came out or new sets came out. The interest of cards and the prices of them would change over time. And I realized, well, I was going to school for business at the time. Is there any possible way that I can integrate this into, you know, as a side business and be able to pay for school? So, you know, Magic the Gathering as a whole has played a huge part in my life. I grew up, you know, with a bunch of friends. We started just with the intro decks like everyone else. You get the little 40-card standard decks. My first deck was a Merfolk deck and, you know, kind of was introduced from the tribal scene. I think the first two or three years of playing Magic, it was just Merfolk versus Elves versus Goblins for like months and months and months with my friends, just playing, having fun. But yeah.
I think we all go through that phase in the beginning. I think there was a spot where I was excited to cast a Crawworm once upon a time. So I totally feel for it. Yeah. So what helped you make the transition from your early days playing Yu-Gi-Oh! And Pokemon and stuff into playing Magic?
Just friend groups, I think. You know, all of the card games, you know, I always loved the fantasy element. I always loved the show. I loved the lore. And I've been a big RPG, you know, Final Fantasy, Kingdom Hearts kind of guy growing up. And you can like easily jump into a similar, you know, story and kind of just jump into the lore, which was Magic. So in college, like I said, one of my friends got that 40-card starter deck, handed it off to us. Everyone kind of jumped into it, got obsessed with the game, and I can say that it's no longer an obsession, it is a full-blown affliction.
We can relate.
That's cool. So you also said you were born overseas and you kind of bounced around. Like, where is your home country, I guess I should ask?
Yeah, so I call actually Western Washington home. So my dad is from Brooklyn, New York, and my mom is from Toronto, but I was born in Germany. And then went from Germany to upstate to New York to, I think, Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, and then ended up coming back here in Seattle. And then my dad would do his deployments to Korea or Iraq at the time.
Gotcha. So were you able to, I mean, because I have, coming from Texas where we have tons of military bases, I have so many friends that have traveled around, and a common thing that they have is they used games almost as a way to connect as they went from place to place. Like, was that something similar to happen for you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, a deck in Magic or a deck in Yu-Gi-Oh, you know, you can, it's almost really a gateway to make new friends, like you're saying. So that's the one thing that was consistent, whether I was at, you know, at school in the playground, you could talk about your favorite shows, talk about your favorite games with people, you know, similar to your age, or if you go down to the local card shop or local game store. I mean, that relationship, that built-in community is ever present around the world.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I always tell people, if you're a gamer, you almost aren't a stranger wherever you go. You can just bring your game materials or just show up to a game store, and there's always somebody looking for one more player for whatever it is that they're doing.
Yep.
So yeah, as you got older, you said obviously you were going to school for finance. You found out there's some money in Magic. How were you able to use your education to kind of feed into your Magic life, I guess?
Yeah, I think while I was in school, learning about accounting and just kind of general business principles, if I buy a card for $3 and I sell it for $4, obviously you've made a buck profit. But also kind of supply and demand, you know, there are a lot of cards out there that may be worth a couple dollars that are older, you know, say Lorwyn or pre-Lorwyn block. But if there's not too much supply for them, then it may not be the best financial, I guess, quote unquote, investment. But more than anything, I kind of separate MTG Finance into two categories. The first being, you know, that being able to subsidize the cost of playing the game. So for many people, if you go to F&M, and especially while you're in college, if you have an extra shock land or an extra, you know, $10 card, you may be able to trade that into the store or trade that into, you know, one of your friends to basically draft again. And that's kind of how that escalated over time. And then that subsidization process kind of later graduated into your general business, where I realized, oh, I can, if I keep a binder full of cards, I can sell them at the day of on a tournament when people are looking for their, you know, whatever, tournament staples. And then that later graduated into kind of the eBay reseller life, the TCG player seller accounts. So to answer your question, pardon me, the business knowledge of accounting, the business knowledge of you know, online marketing has played a huge role in my knowledge and interest in the hobby.
Cool. So are you a full-time, I guess, does Magic pay for the majority of your finances now, or you still have a day job while you're working kind of the Magic side of stuff?
Yeah, so I have a day job. I work, so I'm actually a product data analyst in Seattle. I work at a tech company in which one of my big jobs is to look at which products make a lot of money. If we're to do product development, which features do we need to create to make our users, which features or products should we create to get the best ROI on our time spent? So I work collaboratively. I'm kind of the middle person between engineering to represent some of the technical capabilities that we have, and finance to realize how much time and what is our ROI on that. And then design to say, like, if we have 2 weeks to make this feature or product, what are we optimizing function? Are we optimizing form? Or you know, what can we do? So it's more so a side hobby of mine, but my current project at this moment is to grow it into an online store.
Oh, cool. Okay. So how far away would you say you are from kind of realizing your Magic dream, so to speak?
So at this moment, I'm going through the process of establishing inventory. And I think it's funny because one of the interesting things once you have a critical mass of cards is you soon realize, okay, I know I have these cards, but I don't know where they are. And I know that I bought them, but I also don't know how much I paid for them. If I have a couple hundred copies of a card, or if I have a couple hundred cards just in my closet, how am I going to be able to, you know, make this the most efficient that it can possibly be? So over the next 2 months, I've looked at a couple different inventory techniques. Right now, I just recently got a card sorting robot to be able to sort bulk for me while I'm at work, which is really cool. If you're interested in that, you can check out my Twitter and YouTube channel. I'm going to be posting a video review of that shortly. And then trying to, you know, integrate and create those systems and infrastructure. I want to be able to have the online store. So can we assign a specific barcode or unique number to a card? to be able to track it as it goes from the purchasing side of whether I'm buying it from a player or buying it online to then final that end customer, you know, track all of the data and go through. So I think right now my timetable was the end of the year. That's what I was really hoping for. But as I get into the weeds, I think it's going to be probably springtime. But yeah, super excited.
You know, I really appreciate what you're doing here because I think a lot of Magic players just sort of assume like, oh, I'll just get these cards and I can just sell them. But what you're going through is showing people like if you're really going to make a legit business out of it and you want it to be long-term sustainable, like there's a lot of work and there's a lot of information and a lot of research that you have to put in. This doesn't just happen overnight.
Absolutely.
The other thing that's interesting too is I think when you talk to players, well, there's really two things. The first thing you touched on is just organization is a big deal. I think people just don't know where anything is. They just pile stuff up, and that alone makes it hard to manage. And there's a lot of money even in the commons and uncommons and other stuff too. So, you know, having that stuff organized will let you get at that. The other is I think people often tell themselves or use the ability to resell something as a justification for a purchase, but then never really reach the point of their exit strategy to be able to sell it. They just end up hoarding it.
Cough, cough. you know what I'm talking about, but yeah. That's happened to other people that I've heard of, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. So ironically enough, I have a video on my YouTube channel called, I think it's Path to a Beta Lotus, in which I kind of documented the process over a couple of years where I traded bulk cards into a Beta Black Lotus last year. So for a lot of the people who, I mean, including myself, you may have several decks you don't use or maybe some extra cards in the back of your binder. Especially in Magic, those cards become really, really valuable. And if you're not using them, there is, you know, maybe it's time to look and kind of just realize how much money you have. And is that something that you're actually going to use? Are you getting more value out of it? Or pardon me, would you get more value out of it if you just sold it? Can you use the cash? Or maybe can you trade up? Can you get the dual land that, you know, you wish you had in your EDH deck? Or can you get maybe the shiny foil or whatever it may be? So absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's the other thing too. People do tend to just hold on to things for too long. Like, and they don't really know if they're ever going to need it. They're afraid of missing out on something. And the reality is the longer you hold on to something, when it doesn't necessarily have value to you, there's a lost opportunity cost in the middle of there. So I think that's a thing people could probably really learn from.
Absolutely.
So now that we got you here and we learned a little bit about you, I think we have five fire questions for you if you're up for it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Our guests tend to be very sharp, but let's see how they respond when we put their feet to the fire in five fire questions. All right, so my first question, what would you say are the biggest, or I guess the most common good and bad things people do when it comes to MTG finance?
So I think it depends on what your relationship is with the game, because Magic the Gathering is very, very expensive, as we all know. But like you were saying earlier, if you're approaching the game from an emotional perspective and you're looking at like you just enjoy your cards and you enjoy the game, you enjoy the hobby, I think you should also take a look as to like what ROI you're getting from that and not get too caught up in the gambling aspects of the game. So especially when it comes to new cards, especially when it comes to standard, it's very easy for you to, you know, pick up another couple booster packs for $15, or like you said, keep those extra decks because at some point in time you may use them and they may absolutely return value. But once again, like realizing what you have, realizing the value that it has, realizing the financial value and the power that that holds is super, super important. And I know, I mean, whether it's an extra $50 or $100, you know, we often get lost in the weeds being, you know, romanticizing romanticizing the game and being emotionally connected. And once again, if you're doing it for the emotion and doing it for the hobby and you enjoy playing, absolutely keep doing that. But don't overspend, overbuy because you just want to be involved in the community, because oftentimes that may not be the best decision.
That's a good point of advice. I think that's something people miss a little bit is when you're doing it strictly for finances, it's just a data and numbers decision. You have to kind of take the heart out of it. Mm-hmm. And when it's for fun and everything else, that's a whole different set of decisions.
So hard to take your heart out of it. Or for me anyway. That's probably why I don't have a store.
All right, Zakil, you also talked about trading up to a Lotus, which is pretty impressive. What would you say overall, since you've gotten into Magic, is the best return or speculation you've had on a Magic card?
I think in volume, so I think when did Theros come out? Was that 2014?
Yeah, about then.
Yeah, so the mono black devotion standard, I was super big into Pack Rat. I remember it from RTR Block Draft, and I knew that Pack Rat was going to be very good going into that standard, so I had picked up a bunch of copies. I want to say it maybe like under 100 copies when they were at 25 cents, and then Pack Rat became, if you're familiar with that standard format, probably the most degenerate card and really the defining card of that year.
Super annoying.
Yeah, jumped from 25 cents to like I think $15. So
wow,
that was huge for me.
Okay, I think that qualifies. That's a hell of a return on a card. And then my last question is, if you could give our listeners one piece of info related to Magic Finance, what would it be?
I would say patience, anything that involves money. There's always going to be a better, like there will always be a good deal. Don't get too emotionally invested if you see a card that you really want or a deck that someone is selling or a trade opportunity that comes up. I always try to sleep on any significant purchase of any kind of collectible hobby. So that'd be number one. Once again, try to do your best to separate emotion from your finances. And then also start to see some of the patterns. I think many players know that rotation happens every year. So if you know that standard cards are rotating, maybe take a proactive approach a couple months in advance when the card prices start to come down and move those cards and, trade those into Modern or trade those into Commander.
Cool. Brian, why don't you hit him with your two questions?
All right. Thanksgiving's, right around the corner as we tape this. So tell me what your best Thanksgiving dish and your least favorite Thanksgiving dish. What are you feeding to the dog if the opportunity presents itself?
So I love stuffing. I love stuffing more than I love the turkey.
I can see that.
And, I can do without ham. I like ham, but...
That's going to be controversial.
You ain't lying.
I can do without the ham. I still like it, but if I have to choose, one's got to go between all of the classic mashed potatoes, turkey, stuffing, and ham. Ham's got to go.
Wow. That's going to be controversial. I'm trying to wrap my head around that. Almost forgot my other question. Okay, but yeah, for a second fire question. You can design any float for the Thanksgiving Day parade. Doesn't have to be Magic related. What kind of float are you putting in there if we give you creative control over the parade?
I could design any float. I would design some kind of ocean, merfolk-y fish, something. Maybe it's like a float with coral. I don't know.
I like it.
Some kind of big fish. Something ocean related 100%.
I could get behind that. That'd probably look pretty cool.
Merfolk conquer Thanksgiving. I love it. It's the only format they haven't dominated at some point, right?
Well, we just came off of Thanksgiving, and everybody had everyone at the table. But, we still got to get to our own dinner table talk this week. And this week kind of was inspired by social media. That I was looking around, and I saw this topic come up a couple times. Not just with POCs, it came up with just some different minority groups, it came up with some women. So I found it a really good time to share this. But I wanted to talk about the times that particularly minorities kind of get caught up feeling like they are the representative for their entire group when there's an uncomfortable situation. And I don't know if each of you have dealt with that, off and on. I know I can think of a couple of times it's come up for me. And for the listeners, just to kind of give at least one point of reference, what we're talking about here is, you know, say I'm at a tournament, guy's giving me a hard time. I don't know, maybe I'm pretty sure he cheated or whatever. I'm kind of limited, depending on the space I'm in, on how I can react, because if I'm too aggressive or too loud or whatever, well, okay, well, now I'm representing all of the black people or the black magic players, and I'm going to come off as negative. I'm going to come off as loud and aggressive. So you kind of watch yourself and just tone it down and be like, all right, fine. Let me think through this for a second. All right, let me call a judge. What am I going to tell the judge when he gets here? Let me word this a certain way. You know, and it's all these extra steps you go through that, for sure, when I've talked to my non-white friends, like, those are things that they've never even considered. They just have a moment and they just go through it. So can you two think of a time where that's come up for either of you?
And I can go first. You know, being a reporter, we're in community news, I really have had to pick my battles and just, you know, am I going to start this argument with this person who's the mayor, and they're going to be the mayor probably for the next 20 years? Am I going to pick this fight? And a lot of times, no, I'm not. If I'd like to continue working here, we're going to let some things go, because we got to keep that working relationship. And as like in Magic, you know, I'm often the only person of color in the press box or at the council meeting or what have you. So,
yeah, that's a tough one when you're talking about, especially on a large county or statewide situation, and you're the only one in the room, you know, to represent your space. That's a little hard. And I'm not really sure the advice I would give to other people. You know, I think that's kind of the hard part, because, like, you should still be free to express yourself just the same as everybody else. You know, I can even think of times where it's like, man, do I want to write this certain thing in here? Like, do I want to use certain, I don't know, urban phrases, you know, to kind of couch it a certain way when I'm writing an article or trying to give context to something? You shouldn't have to stop and worry about that. Like, no. It should be a thing that's just there. Like, you're not doing anything wrong, but you're stopping yourself from fully being yourself.
And then I will say, there's been times when, you know, I've decided to not say anything, not fight that battle. Then, you know, 3 or 4 years later, something happens. Oh, so-and-so made a racist comment or racist decision. Like, damn it! I should have said something, you know, 5 years ago.
Yeah, those times you don't say something and then something comes up later, then how do you feel about it, right? Like, did you let something slide?
No, that's one of the things that that I do a lot, is more often conflict avoidance. Like, I have a pretty, like, passive risk averse personality. So anytime I'm at work or in public, like you said, I don't want to come off as the loud, angry, whatever minority, or the, oh, of course this guy is acting this way. I don't like to play into the stereotype, but and it's something I'm getting better at. And I'm curious, just maybe any advice that you can give, is that I want to go about that not in an adversarial way, but I want to do it anytime that that does come up, I'll maybe say something off to the side. But, you know, obviously I live in Seattle, and Seattle is a pretty predominantly white city, and I love living here, but I often encounter that fairly often. So I don't know. I'd be curious to ask, just what is something, if you have any advice for when those situations do come up, how I can better handle that.
Yeah. The thing from my perspective that I realized is, my first thought was, okay, if I say or do this thing, like, is there a way that this is going to come off as looking, I guess, for lack of a better phrase, like, racially motivated? Okay. If it is, or has potential to, how do I approach this conversation? Like, almost like, if I know this is going to be the perception, okay, let me think about it from that perspective and just cut it off before I get started. It's kind of like the Eminem B Rabbit thing. Like, okay, I'm going to take these shots at myself, so now you can't. And then now we can proceed with what really is the issue here. Because I can totally see that, where something happens and you're kind of like, okay, I'm going to tell them this, but are they going to think I'm doing it just because I'm black? Or they're going to say, like, okay, I only care because of this. Or are they going to get defensive? You know, because, like, oh, no, it's not a racist thing. That's not what I meant. And it's like, okay. Sometimes it's sad. I know people don't want to hear this, but sometimes you do have to tone it down depending on who you're speaking to, just to engage the conversation. Like, and it sucks, but sometimes getting the conversation started to create awareness is almost, and sometimes more important than just dealing with this moment in time. Like, you want them to learn a behavior, understand why it's a problem, to correct it going forward, not just change this thing to make me happy right now.
Mm.
But, you know, we talked about it off the air too, that this stuff, I saw two women posting about this on Twitter this week, where they felt that if at any point they don't do well in an event because they're the woman in the event, well, now people are saying, well, this is why more women don't play Magic, or this is why women shouldn't be competitive, or whatever. Like, I can totally see how whatever minority group you're part of, that could be something that's on your mind. And nobody should have to worry about that while they're just playing a game. Like, you're good or bad based on your own skills or practice or whatever. Yeah. It has nothing to do with the other, I don't know, billion people that represent your group or whatever in the world.
Yeah, well, and that's even speaking large. I mean, as a young professional, as I'm, you know, going through and interviewing and talking and networking, I even get similar things in the job market where, you know, I feel confident in my abilities to succeed. And obviously, I'm not going to attribute any of issues of not getting a job to racism or whatever. But there is, there are very few people of color in the tech community. And, you know, I always want to be putting my best foot forward. And I know that I'm a competent, you know, professional. And I'm, but yeah, that's like you're saying, that's something that is just ever present.
And they've done the studies where they'll submit the same resume. You know, one is named Jim and the other one is named, you know, Devotrick or something. And the same resume, is, you know, Jim's resume goes through, you know.
Yeah. Honestly, this is real because, and I can talk from personal experience on that one, because obviously a name like Daquan, you know, is not going to be a white guy most likely whenever you see it. But I can tell you each time I've put my family nickname down, which sounds country and white, and you wouldn't know the difference, it's been significantly more positive as far as returns, reactions, whatever, versus just using my actual name. Now, I will say, professionally, as an adult and everything, being in Seattle, it's been less of an issue. But definitely growing up, especially in like my mid-20s, when you're applying for things, trying to get apartments, whatever, like, it really is a difference. You know, and I did it a couple times just because I was curious. But there was a period where I was playing a decent amount of poker too, and I realized like how many Asian players I knew that just went by like John or Jimmy or whatever. But then actually once I got to know them, they'd have, you know, a very interesting or different name from their home country or whatever, and they were doing it for the same reasons. You know, and I didn't realize how big of a thing that was. So even that little bit is something that we learn to do just because of like the things inside her say, well, yeah, but, you know, because I don't know, for some reason there's this negative connotation that comes with an ethnic name or whatever.
Yeah.
So, you know, multiply that, you know, and expand on it. Well, now you're the person, the physical embodiment of this name in this space. And now you're trying to think of, okay, what are all the things people are going to perceive of me in this very moment if I do this next action? Like, that's a lot. I mean, I don't think people necessarily think about that, but especially when you're in a competitive space like Magic, like, tournaments are already long. They take a lot of energy. You're thinking a lot about so many other things going on. And then like, this is another layer of things you're now trying to process while thinking about the game state or anything else or the progress of the event or deciding, can I draw into the next round or not? You know, this, it doesn't seem like a lot because you sort of get used to it, which is sad to say. I guess you just get numb to it because just the way you operate. But it is a whole other level and amount of energy you're putting in that other people don't have to.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, it's a tough topic, you know, and I guess if I just have advice, I guess from both sides, I would say for the non-minorities, you know, the white people out there, whatever, when somebody says something, try not to be defensive about it. Like, it's not so much about you being explicitly negative, racist, whatever. Sometimes it's just about, hey, I'm not sure you're aware. Here's a thing so you know. From the other side, from a personal point of view, kind of like we talked about earlier, I would say just take the time to think through it just a little bit to consider the other person's position, especially if it's likely they're going to be defensive about it. So you can use the proper terminology, the right amount of, I guess, education, you know, because it's tough. I get people are like, you know, I don't want to do any more emotional lifting. I don't want to have to educate people. You know, I get it. It tires you out and it sucks. But the reality is, like, if we don't do it, who is? Like, we can't keep passing the buck. Like, somebody's got to do it sooner or later. I mean, we're doing our part, but, you know, we're only a couple of people.
Yeah. And Thanksgiving is the perfect time for this. Gather around the dinner table, you know.
It was definitely well-timed. I cannot complain. It was very fortuitous that things worked out the way they did.
If you can get one uncle to stop saying, I'm not trying to be racist, but, you
know. You just, man, that's like the craziest phrase, man. When somebody says that, you are just literally like, this next thing is going to be a doozy, yeah. Isn't it?
It never ends well. Never. Never one time has somebody said, I'm not trying to be racist, but most black people I know are really smart. That's never where it goes.
Hey, we had the former vice president. Didn't he come out? He give that speech a couple months ago.
Where God,
he
was which saying, time?
Well, he said, well, I think everybody should know that poor kids could be just as smart as white kids.
Yeah.
Oh, my. I'm just like, whoa.
All the time. For a while there, it's like almost every day something like that came out of his mouth. It just we remember why he was vice president and not president
on a weekly basis. Oh, man. I about lost it when I saw that. I was like, you're kidding me, right? Like,
this, we could have a whole dinner table talk about just about Biden. Did you see the one where he says, you know, yeah, you're talking to an Indian gentleman. Yeah, there are a lot of Indian people in Delaware. You know, you can't go into a Dunkin' Donuts or a gas station without picking up the accent. It's a miracle. It's a testament to the fact that he's from 50 years ago that he has any career in politics at all. It was cool to say that stuff just a few years ago. And depending on, I guess, what part of the country you're in, still cool to say it.
And, you know, and I think this comes back to where we started at kind of the top of the hour, was that when a lot of this is still coming from places where you have people that, I guess the only phrase I have is they're just not fully acclimated or fully adjusted to intertwine cultures, to desegregation, I guess, on some levels, depending on how old they are, you know, and you're seeing it less and less of a problem with younger audiences. I would say the farther you get to people that are in their 30s and their 20s, especially, I see more conversations happening. I see more people trying to learn and understand and see about different people's cultures and whatnot. And I think that's a very positive thing, you know, that we're seeing the transition, that you're seeing more TV shows and more animated series that have characters of all different cultures and backgrounds. Hell, Marvel Comics is starting to have lead characters from all different nationalities. And it's just, what would be nice is when we get another 15, 20 years down the road and it's even less of an issue because more people are just seeing it day to day.
And as you may have seen, Disney Plus has like basically a racism warning on a lot of their older cartoons. Did you see that on the Disney Plus?
No, but that doesn't surprise me. I mean, go back and watch the old Warner Brothers stuff or whatever. There's some blackface going on. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some like side jokes and comments, and you know, dudes doing the mammy, you know, coming up on some stuff. Like, there's a few of those things in there.
Until, I'd say, about 1987, 88, Tom and Jerry. You remember Tom's own... Thomas? Did you catch that mouse yet? Yeah, and until the late 80s, I still saw those cartoons.
Yeah, I mean, so it's changing, you know, but for everybody who ever feels that way, you know, it's okay to feel that way. Like, you're not alone. It's not a unique thing just to you. It is normal. I mean, I think we've all said, you know, we have those moments, you know, just like Zakiel was saying, you go for an interview and sometimes that's a thing where you're like, okay, well, how am I being viewed or whatever? But at the end of the day, if you're confident in your stance, you're confident in your message, you're confident in your skills, then go with it. And the world just deals with it one way or the other.
Message.
Ignore the haters, I guess.
There you go. Shake them haters off.
Yeah, so that's bringing us right up on the hour. So I think this is where we're going to wrap it up for this episode. So, Zakiel, why don't you tell everybody about any upcoming projects you have and where we can find you on social?
Yeah, so all my magic stuff you can find at Merfolk Magic on both Twitter and YouTube. Most of the future content creation will come out of YouTube. It'll be, I have that card sorting robot review, I think hopefully being finished up in the next week and a half. And I'll continue to kind of tell that story of, you know, transitioning from a backpack, you know, online kind of seller and building a brand, building a business over the course of the next couple months.
Awesome. And Brian, where can they find you?
I am DL Caesar. That's spelled just like the Roman Emperor. And I am on Twitch, YouTube, and Twitter.
And as usual, I am Power Dragon, PowerDragon. You can find me on most social channels. And if you want to come hang out, I will be on Twitch for another 50 days in a row as I complete the 60-day challenge. So come hang out over there and have a good time with us. But that's it. I want to say thanks to Zakiel for coming and hanging out, to Brian for joining me as usual. I guess that's it for us this week. Hopefully we'll have you listening again next week. And whenever you're listening, wherever you're listening from, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. If you have a chance, please check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/colorofmagic. You can also find us on Facebook at Color of Magic. We're also over on Twitter and Twitch at Color of MTG. And we have a website you can check out, colorofmtg.com. Please share our episode with your friends and help us grow our base. As always, every little bit helps, and we appreciate your support.